were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. We have spent the season of Lent knowing more and more the love of God for us revealed in Jesus Christ. And so we come to that day when God's love is revealed supremely in him who was dead and is alive forevermore. Love, according to friend and theologian Robert Jensen, is not so much the name of a personality trait as shorthand for a narrative, death and resurrection. That narrative is before us this morning, telling us of the love that came near and is going with us as we try to make sense of all these things that have happened. Perhaps we would do well to establish the things in this narrative, in this shorthand for love, that did happen. Death and resurrection. Shorthand for love. What happened was Jesus was crucified, died, and was buried. We know this because there were witnesses, women who had been with Jesus and followed him all the way from Galilee. On Friday afternoon, they stood at a distance and watched as Joseph of Arimathea took his body down from the cross and wrapped it in linen cloths and then took him to a tomb that was really a big stone hewn out of the rock, or a big tomb, you know what I mean. Anyway, Luke says, in case we missed the detail, they saw the tomb and how his body was laid. I think almost everyone in this sanctuary can, without a doubt, follow the story to this point. Most might even add two more details to the things that happened in the enlightened way that we know what we know. The stone was inexplicably rolled away, and the body was missing. These last two things only compounded the real thing that had happened. A friend, a colleague, the son of a mother, had died. Let me pause to assure you of one thing before you stop listening to the story because its claims become unreasonable. The characters in this narrative are trying nothing in themselves that would help them make sense of the things that had happened. Things that now included an empty tomb and a missing body. They had no word, no story, no reason they could tell themselves about this. I hasten to add that sometimes being at a loss is the only honest place to be. While they were at a loss, Luke says, two men entered the story and stood beside them. The clue that these men are about to give them a word that is not their own, a word that they couldn't say to themselves, is that these men are dressed in dazzling clothes. If you know the whole story, you know that this is not the first time dazzling characters have appeared out of nowhere. Later in the story, these men will be called angels. They are messengers of God, and the women are terrified. Why are you looking for the living among the dead? They ask the women. He is not here, obviously, they say, but he has risen. Not so obvious. If you count yourselves among the reasonably enlightened here today, this is where you begin to think about whether the relatives will be on time for dinner or which teams will be in the final four at the end of the night. I know you. You're out there. Yet this is the point in the story. Every Easter morning, that I beg you to suspend disbelief for a few minutes more and see where this narrative about love, this story about death and resurrection takes you. Remember, the men say next. Remember how he told you he would die and be raised? But the women did remember. And apparently remembering was enough for them to go on. Jesus said he would rise. The tomb is empty. It must be true. I confess that this is not enough for me to go on. Nor was it enough for the disciples. Wishful thinking. An idle tale, according to the 11. At most, Peter is astonished by the empty tomb when he arrives. Period. So ends the appointed reading for Easter. It is where Mark's gospel left us last year, except in Mark, the women run from the tomb and say nothing to anyone because they are terrified. I am not afraid, but I am here to tell you that an empty tomb is an idle tale, is risen.